This is Plans, Hope, and a Future podcast with Jennifer Osborne and Tiffany Brereton. Hello, everyone.
Hi, friends.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Plans, Hope, and a Future podcast. We are very grateful and thankful that you have decided to listen to our podcast. And we are really excited because today we have a special guest, a very dear friend of ours, Miss Courtney Walton, who is the Chief Learning Officer at Undivided and is currently getting her doctorate in educational leadership with a focus in racial trauma in Black women, predominantly in white spaces. And she's going to talk to us today a little bit about epigenetics. Welcome to the show, Miss Courtney.
Thank you, ladies. I'm so happy to be here.
Woo! Yeah, we're excited to have you. I was telling Tiffany, I really wanted to interview you as it relates to epigenetics because I've heard you speak on this a couple of times. And while I know you're not getting your degree in this, you do have a lot of really great insight and information, and you just really open that subject up wide. And so I was like, man, we've got to have her on here just to talk about that. So before we even get into epigenetics, tell us a little bit about you, Miss Courtney. Who are you?
Who am I? I would say I'm someone who loves beautiful things. I love people who are, especially people of peace and who bring me joy. Those, my niece and my nephew, who are little treasures to me. I love sports. I'm that kind of gal. So catch me at a football game, baseball game, who day all the way. Yes.
Who day.
Yes. Who day. Love it. I love tea. I love walks in the park. And I love to make space and hold space for people in the fullness of who they are. Oh, and I'm so thankful that God continues to hold space for me in the fullness of who I am.
I love that. That is so awesome. In the fullness of who they are. Mm-hmm. And you are a devout, wonderful woman of God. Your spirit is awesome. Just some of the teachings you've done, even just about spiritual life, has just been really insightful and good.
Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about what is epigenetics. That's a really weird term.
Yeah.
It's not genetics, right? It's one of those big words. I've said it to a few people and they're like, Epa what?
Yeah, already Googled it. I'm just saying, they're gonna Google
it. Love it. There's some good stuff out there, Tiffany. So yes, I like to call myself someone who doesn't have an expertise in epigenetics, but who has a deep interest in it. And that interest has allowed me to do a lot of research and get to a better understanding of what it is and for me, why it is, if that makes sense. So very simply put, epigenetics can be described as inherited behaviors. So something that you may not have experienced, but maybe you were exposed to either in your environment or generations before you, people who are in your family line were exposed to some things, and things get passed on down the line where you are then impacted. So what is inherited? And in terms of the DNA component, your DNA is not altered. So it's not changing the DNA, but it's modified. So if you Google what DNA looks like, you'll get a picture there. If you Google epigenetics and DNA, you'll see something called a tag that is kind of attached to your DNA. And that really visually represents epigenetics. There's something that's been attached that has been passed on from generations that now impacts you in some way today. And that can be for the good or for the bad.
Wow. And it just determines that the tag determines whether or not that particular gene is activated or expressed in some way. Is that right?
That's correct. 100%. And depending on that kind of particular sequence, it kind of talks about like how your body sort of reacts or is reactive, if that makes sense, to something based on that tag.
And was, if I remember correctly, in one of our training sessions, there was a video that you showed where it talked about how epigenetics really came to full light when they were looking at the children of Holocaust survivors and how they were expressing the effects of the trauma without ever having been a part of the trauma.
Yeah, it's a very fascinating study. And you can, again, Google a lot of this and you'll find it. But there's research that has been conducted, exactly what you said, Jen, of individuals who were survivors of the Holocaust compared to their children, grandchildren, who had no exposure to that horrific trauma, exhibiting similar reactions to things that they had no exposure or experience with. And so scientists were really, really intrigued by the similarities when the experiences were so different. And so it was really unveiling these new findings, emerging research that was showing there is a connection. Even if you didn't experience this trauma, somehow you have been impacted by it in a way that is significant. And those researchers are wanting to find out more and more about that. And if you look at a lot of the tragic and horrific incidences in our country, from slavery to indigenous people being displaced horrifically, there are ties there too, in terms of what generations past the point of trauma have been experiencing, reacting to, how they've been showing up.
Wow. And so how does this play out in a positive way?
Yes, great question. So sorry, I don't know if you can hear those sirens behind me.
I cannot.
So how this plays out in a positive way is that there are maybe experiences that individuals, again, were not exposed to, but maybe they've picked up traits that connect to resilience. That's huge, especially if they've experienced their own trauma. Maybe they're realizing that they have, you know, a sense of resilience that they didn't even realize they could tap into. And that can be passed down as well. And the thing with epigenetics, in terms of looking at the DNA and the gene piece, they can be reversed. So it's not like this is an irreversible thing, if you will. When you think about what is being passed down from a negative sense, that resilience piece is huge. Because what it creates is a sense of hope of letting all of us know, I either have been through some things and maybe that's going to be passed down in some way to my children or their children, or I've picked up some things from my parents or grandparents. That doesn't have to be the end of the story. There are positives that we can also pass on. We can create a different story for those coming after us as we're choosing to do this unveiling work. Mm-hmm. And really tap into the rootedness of who we are, what happened to us, what happened to those who came before us. And not to minimize the pain at all, I think a part of this is being willing to unveil those hard things so that we can get to a better understanding, mm-hmm. a rootedness of where we really come from and what happened to us, not what's wrong with us. There's a great book out that's entitled What Happened to You versus What's Wrong with Me. That's a very important shift, even when we ask ourselves that question. And this helps us understand that a bit more.
Yeah. So why are you so passionate about this? Why have you picked this thing, this topic to dive into so deeply?
Yeah, I heard a quote. And I actually, when I saw it, there wasn't a name attached to it. So whoever Googles it and finds it, I give honor to this person, but it's, we repeat what we don't reveal. And I think that is profound. And this topic is really, really important to me because I think there's so much that comes from unveiling and revealing. And I think God calls us to do that, that when things are kept in secret, whether or not it's intentional or we didn't even know, there's so much harm that can be done. Mm-hmm. And so really participating in that process of unveiling is healing. And healing can also be passed down. And so for me, it kind of was like this fork in the road moment of like, wow, this is really important because we need to name the pain. We need to name what happened to our ancestors, into those generations before us that we never met. We need to name that because, one, it's honoring to them and what they went through. It connects to my story and my life, and it has a potential to create a different story for those coming after me if I'm doing that work of unveiling. That's what it means to me and why it's so significant.
Wow, that's so good.
That's very cool. So I know in one of our conversations that you and I have had, we were talking about personal responsibility and how that really plays a key component to digging into these areas that you may have inherited the trauma and then working that through so that you can do exactly what you just said, right? Yes. And not pass that along.
Yes, absolutely. So that personal responsibility is a real thing, right? Either, you know, if it's something that we know or not, once we start, especially as adults, living in certain ways, we pick up patterns. We do have to own how we show up. And it's so important for us to continue to do the work that goes in both directions. What happened before? What is important for me to pay attention to? How do I want to show up differently now that I have this knowledge and awareness? So to me, it's almost like putting puzzle pieces together to create a more clear picture of who you are, so that you can even have that sense of ownership and responsibility from a greater place of rootedness and also grace.
Yeah.
Because again, that question, what happened to you? Have you ever really stopped to pause and really consider that versus what's wrong with me? Why do I keep acting like that? Why do I show up like that? That accusatory language is just not helpful. Instead, it's almost like be a bit of a detective, if you will, instead of a judge. I think we're really good at judging ourselves,
Amen. But
not really being a detective and figuring out why we show up a certain way. Yep. And if we just make that shift, I think it helps us to have ownership in a way that is honoring, in a way that's mature, in a way that is more helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was amen in her.
It's amen. I thought you were going to ask a question. You know, and I love that you talk about that because, you know, I've heard some people that have experienced trauma, and I feel very passionate about helping people that have experienced mm-hmm. trauma. Same with Tiffany. And mm-hmm. some people will just say, well, I don't need to deal with that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to push that down. Now, I recognize just on a personal level that it's kind of an unhealthy place to be, right? For you personally, because then you're coping like with, you know, a paralyzed leg. Like you're not going to walk right if your leg is paralyzed, right? And so you add in that other component of potentially passing that along, the trauma, there's that potential. So then it makes it even a bigger issue of like, whether you intend to or not, it could in theory get passed along. And studies have shown that in so many cases, you know, slavery and how that mentality and how that trauma has passed along Indigenous people, you know, all of those things, how that becomes inherited. So then that makes that healing even more critical.
Yes, 100%. There's a professor and author, Dr. Joy DeGruy, and she wrote a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I hope I pronounce her name right. I always am concerned if I pronounce her name right, but her work is amazing. But one of the stories that she mentioned in one of the pieces that she produced was just an example of if there were a Black mother who was denigrating their child and maybe they did something wrong and she's like, see, why did you do this? You're so stupid. Obviously not advocating for anyone to talk to their child that way. But what she was unveiling was extremely, I think, just revelatory, because she said, think about it, without knowing it, perhaps this mom is carrying over some things that maybe those in her family line experienced during a time of slavery. And she said, think about it. A young Black boy being ripped away from his mother. What is that mom going to do to protect him? Say, oh, he's stupid. You don't want him. He can't even read. He's stupid. He won't do anything for you. If that actually ends up protecting that young boy and allows him to stay with his mother, then what she actually did was from a place of love. Now you fast forward to this mom with this son, perhaps she's doing the same thing because of what she knows about how young Black men are treated. Maybe there's some sort of protection there in her language without her even knowing why she's doing it that is connected to something from the past. Again, let me be clear, personal responsibility is important.
Right.
Raising a child is not ever good. But if we do this unveiling work and understand like, oh, I wonder what happened to the mom? How was she talked to? What happened to her mom?
Right.
And trace things back, there's more that we can unlock there than what we just see on the surface. And again, we step out of that role of judge and into detective to do more work to understand the full picture.
Yeah.
Oh my word. That's amazing.
I love how it is like a scientific explanation for something that has been talked about spiritually in the Bible and how things can pass.
Yes.
Like generational curses or what have you. And I love how science is just starting to catch up to that.
Yes, I love the intersection of faith and science in that, because to me, it just like sets off all of the flashlights, the light bulbs. Like, this is clear from every point of view.
Right.
And like you said, we've heard it before, and it's even more illuminating that there's scientific proof of what we know in scripture. And not that we necessarily need the scientific proof, but it just makes it even that much more like, oh my gosh.
Right, right.
All the aha moments, you know? And I love the intersection of science and faith in that, because I think it's powerful to know that when we have maybe felt those moments of like, I don't know why I act like that. I don't even know where that came from.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with us. Perhaps something happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
Need to pay attention to versus continuing to, again, point the finger at ourselves.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that. It is such, I mean, just talk about personal responsibility. If we can become our own private investigator and really dig back to those roots, man, we're so much better because of it. And I know Jen and I have both experienced those things dealing with healing, and this is just such good information. But I did want to jump over a little bit. You had that amazing title, your PhD, or working towards your PhD, and your focus is on Black women and trauma predominantly in white spaces. I know I said that a little wrong. Yeah. Forgive me. And why did you pick that as your main focus? I know you do some work with Undivided we haven't touched on yet. So I would love for you to explain that a little bit and why that was your focus.
Yeah, for me, what really kind of helped me to land there in terms of my research focus, part of it is my story and my lived experience, and seeing the lived experiences of other Black women around me and being curious, putting on that detective investigator hat again and really trying to understand what's happening, because it's not just me feeling this way. So I think this is worth looking at in a deeper way. And so it made me want to do some unveiling work to really understand, are there some overlaps, some, you know, similar things that show up for Black women in leadership in predominantly white spaces? And doing the research, I'm finding that there are. And to me, that felt important to name that first for Black women to be able to kind of go on their own journey of unveiling, and also for leaders who are not Black but work with Black women. Maybe they are the managers or bosses of Black women, that they can better understand the experience. Yes, there's no single story, but when there are a lot of overlaps, I think it's something that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And that mattered. And in doing this research, it has been such an eye-opener for me to see these women have these aha moments as they're doing the unveiling work. And they're like, wait, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. And to see those light bulbs go off to me is, again, in that process of they're not going to repeat certain things because they're becoming revealed. There's going to be healing that happens because of the unveiling. And I love being positioned to be in a space where more of that can happen, more people can get freedom around that.
I just had such a beautiful visual and, you know, science and faith meeting again, but, you know, we say these aha moments and light bulbs going off. And I just felt like that was such a good representation of the dark spaces within us. And I just saw, you know, light bulbs going off, and it's just like Jesus, the light being welcomed into those spaces. And that's when his healing, you know, can really come into those dark spots. So what a beautiful picture. And we've been just saying that so casually, you know, for so long, light bulbs going off. And it really is him and his transformation. When the light comes in, the healing can take place, right? And revelation can happen, and we can shift and change mindsets because he put his finger on it, right? Like, we can't do it on our own, but he put his finger on it. He sent the light and healing. So anyway, little tangent. Sorry.
No, I love that, Tiffany. I love that visual. I'm a visual person too. And I think about that, and thinking about, like, if, you know, we were all in a dark room and one light bulb goes off and you're like, oh, and then another one, and then another one, and that begins to ripple. And then you're in a room full of light. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's healing kind of rippling into another person's healing. There's an author, Alex L., and she talks about how healing is an act of community care, that when we receive healing, the community actually gets healed. And I, as you shared that vision, that visual, I see that ripple effect of light bulb after light bulb, healing after healing.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, even Jen and I are both authors and have written our memoirs, and even seeing that in our families and friends who just read our books and getting messages, like I'm sure Jen has, and, you know, people just being touched by that and giving them an opportunity to share their stories, because it's unfortunately a similar just story to a lot of women and a lot of people in this world. So
that's so good.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Undivided, because I know Undivided is amazing, and definitely started out in our church, and we want to hear all about it for the people that do not know anything about Undivided.
Yes. Undivided is a nonprofit. We are a 501c3, and we started out of a church, which was amazing. And now we have branched off to working with other churches and now organizations that are non-faith-based. So we're like covering the field, which is super exciting. And we are a racial solidarity, healing, and justice movement and organization. And our hope is that through experiences that are immersive, people will have an opportunity to get proximate to other people's stories, and that through those interactions, the ripple effects will start to happen that will bring about change in their churches, communities, and organizations. And we are so thankful for the rich content that we've created, which happens either in cohorts that run for 7 weeks consecutively or workshops. But we also feel like the meat is the people, their stories. Really getting a chance to connect with someone who doesn't look like you, someone who's from a different background. That's where the beauty, I think, happens, that creates these ripple effects that are lasting.
Yeah. So who is Undivided for?
Yeah. So Undivided is for the individual, the church, or the organization who is really passionate about seeing racial unity and justice in this world. There's a lot, my goodness, you can get whiplash from seeing all the things that are happening in this world. And it's really for that individual who wants a different narrative, who wants a different story, who has hope, may not be sure what to do with that hope or how to keep the flame going because it feels like it's getting smaller and smaller. And it's for the church or the organization or individual who's like, I know I should be involved in this conversation. I don't know how. And so for us, we share the how. We partner with you. We have trained leaders who are leading these conversations so that you don't have to figure it out all by yourself. And for people of color who are going through this experience, for many of them, they've done a lot of this before, and sometimes it might feel like, oh, do I have to show up again and, you know, educate, or people have to learn from my pain? We're hearing different stories. We're hearing that this has felt healing. It feels different. For many white individuals, they might be thinking, oh man, what do I say? Am I going to say the wrong thing? I'm curious, but can I even ask that question? And what we say is, come, we're hearing, I was able to bring my questions, or even if I had questions that I thought I might not or shouldn't ask, I understood why. And so there's just this healing that's happening on both sides, that we're finding. So that's who this is for.
Yeah, that's so good. I mean, these burning questions that we've all had, I'm sure, about everything, it's such a good opportunity and a safe place to bring those questions.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's an organization, I believe, that talks about creating a brave space. And what we often say is, we'll utilize that in that a brave space is one where we can't guarantee that you'll feel comfortable all the time. We can't guarantee that you'll walk out feeling like, oh, that was great. All the things are resolved. But we can almost guarantee that it will be worth it. That if you think about something that grows and growing pains and what takes time, it isn't always comfortable.
Mm-mm.
Good things usually aren't. You know, when you have a child, I'm sure for the women out there, if you had a labor and delivery process where it was roses and rainbows, bless you. But if you did it,
the Lord has blessed you.
The Lord has blessed you. On, you know, that beautiful baby that you maybe had probably came with some pain before they got into this world.
Yeah.
And that life was worth it. That process was worth it. And so we are birthing something in these communities and these churches, and it's hard, but it's so good. What is coming out on the other side is so good. And so we're excited about that.
It's an awesome, awesome program and process. I've been through it a couple of times, and I can tell you, I learned so much, and I feel like undivided, like, talking about that illumination. It just illuminates so many things, so much in our history that people may not be aware of because they took place in different parts of the country, and you know, how them all taken together does reveal a narrative and the way things have been done. And I just love that you guys have in your program the educational part of it to just illuminate that stuff, so that you're not feeling like, well, I don't what have I got to learn, what am I going to come away with? And I've really like gotten a lot out of it, and I'm just really grateful for Undivided. It's just a great, great, great program. I think if anybody has an opportunity to go through it, they should totally do it.
Yes.
They will not be sorry. I mean, it's good. It's really good. And it helps you understand your brother and your sister of color even more. I mean, as a white person, to understand the pain. And as Christians, if our brother and our sister are in pain, we should be taking on that pain. That should be ours as well. And so I think the work is just, it's super important, super important.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Jen. That is so powerful, and I appreciate your perspective and your experience. Our hope is that people would feel like they are supposed to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah.
That their stories matter. Bringing all of that together, I believe God designed us to be having these kinds of conversations in a way that is healing and not harmful, and really giving a different story to the world about who we actually can be versus who the world is showing up as in the conversation, which is really hard to look at sometimes.
Yeah. So probably we're getting close to the end of our time, but last question I wanted to ask you is, so your position is chief learning officer. Like, what does that fun role get to do in relation to Undivided and getting this out to the world?
Yeah. So my role includes developing and designing trainings for our facilitators and presenters who are leading in the spaces that I shared earlier, our workshops and our cohorts. Also making sure that they stay equipped in the work that they're doing, helping to support my team that is also leading those individuals. I also help with content creation, making sure that our content is current, that it is impactful, that it includes the right mix of history, faith teachings for our faith-based product, and then also workplace content and teachings that are really important for those who are in organizations. I help to kind of maintain our learning internally within our organization. So doing different trainings for staff and doing also some trainings outside as well, making sure that we stay current in what's happening in the world and helping individuals to access resources that are really helpful, true, and also productive to the conversation.
Wow. I love what the Lord is using you for to have such a great impact. I can imagine with that role, when your time on this earth is completed and you're before the Lord, he's going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. And he's going to turn you around and you're going to just see the impact of this very great work.
Thank you, Jen. That means a lot. That's very sweet.
It's amazing. Yeah, as a mama who is raising white children, this is a big thing for me. And I want to change the narrative of my family and what that looks like. I would love for Undivided. All I kept thinking when you were talking was, can Undivided come up with a homeschool curriculum? Because I've homeschooled and I probably will again. And I try, but I want the right things to be taught to them. Mm-hmm. You know, we're watching the movie Harriet together and fun things like that, because it's my favorite movie of all time. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, just that would be an amazing homeschool curriculum. So, you know, you can thank me later when you get really big, because you have this amazing curriculum. Just send me the royalty check. Send you all those
I love that, Tiffany. Actually, you're kind of speaking prophetically. One of the next things, we've taken this into the workplace. We've been getting a lot of requests for what does this look like in the educational space?
Yes.
And so we're just on the very, very baby early stages of looking at how we can create something for children, teachers, families to be able to have these conversations. So
that would be amazing. Our crew will be your pilot.
Love season. It.
My little kiddos, we would love that. So
I love that.
Well, Courtney, thank you for sharing of your time and telling us a little bit about epigenetics and Undivided and just about you. It's been a pleasure so much.
Yes. So great to be with you both. Thank you so much.
Thank All right, you. Friends, until next time.
Bye, friends.
You've been listening to the Plans, Hope, and a Future podcast with Jennifer Osborne and Tiffany Brereton. Podcast copyright 2022, Parable Road, LLC.